The big story around the NHL this morning involved the Montreal Canadiens, and we're still talking about it, and we'll continue to talk about it. The Montreal Canadiens and Nick Suzuki. Now, and just so you know, it's an 8-year contract extension with the Montreal Canadiens at a pretty big ticket, too. $63 million. So the AAV on this one is 7.875. Now, Suzuki was going to be one of those players that we sort of followed all season long and said, when are they going to sign? At what point does the team push for a deal? At what point does the player push for a deal? Nick Suzuki, to me, and I've known him a little bit going back to his days when he played junior hockey, when he used to wear number 37 in honor of his favorite hockey player, Patrice Bergeron, when he played with the Owen Sound Attack. He's always been someone that's been really comfortable betting on himself. And there was a feeling heading into this season that as much as the Montreal Canadiens might have wanted to do a long-term deal with Nick Suzuki, there was a thought that he might not want to do something until later on this season, gamble on himself, knowing he's going into the year as a first-line center for the Montreal Canadiens. Listen, this is a guy that plays in all situations, right? We know this about Nick Suzuki. You watched the playoffs last year in a lot of ways. That was a big coming-out party for Nick Suzuki. Defensively sound. As I mentioned, his favorite player is Patrice Bergeron. That's who he models his game after, trains with, people like Ryan O'Reilly in the off seasons. Like, these are the people that influence his world and influence his game. Like, if you look around the NHL and you say, okay, who are the next players that are on the horizon for a Selke trophy? Nick Suzuki's in that list. Like, Nico Hischier's in that list. Bo Horvat is in that list. There are a lot of young players that are that next wave that are going to take over the conversation from your Bergerons, from your Couturiers, from your Ryan O'Reillys, and maybe Nick Suzuki is top of that list. But he's someone that a lot of people believed might want to gamble on himself this season and do a deal after what many anticipate would be a huge season for the number one center in Montreal. Elliot Friedman joins me now for more on this story. Elliot, just trying to make the point a couple of seconds ago about Nick Suzuki always being someone who's been comfortable betting on himself. And I really thought that Nick Suzuki, and maybe he just got the number that he was comfortable with and he did the deal. I thought Suzuki might want to take the entire season, not focus on a deal, just play, and at the end of it, do the deal, anticipating a huge season, as I think we all are, for Nick Suzuki. Why get the deal done now?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. You know, the Canadians had the offer sheet thrown their way, and I think part of it to them was, you know what, we're not risking any of this again. You know, I've told this story before, but I do think one of the reasons the Matthews contract ended where it is in Toronto is that the Maple Leafs were worried what Arizona was going to do. So I think Montreal takes a look. They saw how their offseason got disrupted, and they said, enough screwing around. Let's get this done. As a matter of fact, an executive from another team told me this morning, he said that the rumor was that this was like the calmest contract negotiation around. And he said, I wish I could have more like this once. And that doesn't mean there weren't intense conversations about how it had to get done. But like someone said to me, the word was, it just was never anywhere close to going off the rails. That the two sides, the team and the agents, I think Jeff Jackson and Dave Gagne, who represent Suzuki, like they explained their positions. They went back and forth, and they basically got it done. And I just think that, you know, Montreal, because of what happened in the summer, they wanted to get it done. I think Suzuki is very happy to be a Montreal Canadian. You get it done. I'm not sure he's what his ceiling is going to be in terms of points, but to me, he's a number one center in the NHL. He's a great two-way player. He played very well for them in the postseason last year. I'm not sure how much his counting numbers are going to be at times, but I think he's definitely going to live up to that contract.
Yeah, you know what? I look at Nick Suzuki and I say to myself, let's not just focus on the counting numbers here. Like, to me, if he puts up, if he's even just shy of a point a game guy, yet he's, you know, in the conversation with Sean Couturier and Patrice Bergeron and Ryan O'Reilly and these, you know, defense first type centers, and becomes one of the most complete hockey players in the game, not unlike his idol Patrice Bergeron. I say to myself, like, you got a player here. Like, regardless of whether he's going to put up 100 points, I don't care. If he scores 70 points and he becomes, you know, one of the, you know, a perennial Selke Trophy candidates and has a couple in his hip pocket by the time his entire career is done, I say bravo. That's a great season to me, regardless of how many points you put up.
Yeah, I agree with that. If you're Patrice Bergeron, I'll take it. I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah, it's interesting, too.
Patrice Bergeron, that's not that good. He's somewhat better.
It's funny, too, you know, normally, you know, and you see this at the combine every year, right? And I remember Suzuki specifically talking about Bergeron. A lot of guys will come in and they'll talk about how, you know, their guy is, you know, Patrick Kane, or, you know, their guy is Nikita Kucherov. And it's generally Nathan MacKinnon, generally people that put up big points. From day one, Suzuki's always wanted to be like a Patrice Bergeron style player. Like that's him, and that's what he works on, you know, in the offseason. You know, he skates with, he does a couple of skates, and one of them with Joe Hischen. And, you know, Hischen will tell you the stories. This guy is committed to being like Patrice Bergeron or Ryan O'Reilly. That's Nick Suzuki. So there was a...
It's like saying, I want to be a broadcaster like Jeff Merrick. I would just say, like, aim higher. Like,
way higher. First of all, the money makes noise in your jeans. You want that long, quiet Elliot Friedman cash. That's what you want.
Yeah, sure.
So a couple of things here. So much like we talked about Barkov last week, and when his deal gets signed, okay, so who does that influence right away? Who's the next one that you look at? Is there an obvious one, maybe other than Brady Tkachuk, that you look at and you say, okay, so Suzuki's done 8 years, 7.875. What does that mean for Brady Tkachuk? Or is there another player out there that you look at and say, okay, what does this mean for, I don't know. I'm almost tempted for you to say Jesperi Kotkaniemi, but I think there's a strong belief that there's a contract waiting in
there's already
to
something
come out,
there,
come right? out in yeah. January. So
yeah.
That would be an obvious one for me. Is there another obvious one out there as far as comparables go?
I'm trying, like, you know, the first one that jumped out to me was Josh Norris, but Norris doesn't have the resume yet that Suzuki has. Now, I think Josh Norris is going to be a hell of a player. I think he's going to be a really good player for a long time in this league, but he doesn't have, you know, Suzuki's pedigree yet. Although, you know, we'll see where we are in, you know, less than 8 months. You know, the Tkachuk is the obvious one. I don't know if they're really comparable. Suzuki's a center. Tkachuk isn't. I'm sure Ottawa would love to get Tkachuk at that number on an 8-year deal, but I don't think it fits. I think Tkachuk is going higher than that on an 8-year term, and I think Ottawa's prepared to do that. You know, I don't know where this is going to go with Tkachuk and the Senators. I don't like this for them. You know, I think you have to have him to start the year. Like, honestly, Jeff, at the end of the day, it comes down to who's got the hammer. And sometimes you go into a negotiation with the hammer, and sometimes you don't, and you just have to open up wide and say, let me eat that bleep sandwich, and I'll try to make it taste as good as I possibly can. Yeah. I just think in this case, like, Ottawa's hammer is they don't sign the player, but how are you really benefiting if you're the Senators with that? And I just think you gulp, you take the bridge deal, and you bet on the group you have. I that's what I would do if I were them.
Yeah, I wonder if this is a matter of, okay, let's see what start they have, because maybe then, because in all these negotiations, you look for pressure points, and to your point, who has the hammer? And that changes as the ebbs and flows of a negotiation go. You know, the next pressure point here is they open up against the Maple Leafs on Thursday in Ottawa. And then after that, maybe the next pressure point is, okay, let's see where they're at after 10 games.
And I don't like that for Ottawa.
No, I'm saying if you're the Brady Tkachuk camp, like you're looking at this and you're saying we need to hold here, because if they have a flat start, what's the conversation going to be? It's huge.
You know what? I don't buy that. Like, even if you have a good start, does it really benefit you to be without him long term? You know, I remember, like, the ultimate contract stalemate that blew up in a team's face was Emmitt Smith with the Dallas Cowboys in the 90s. And it was their second Super Bowl year. They started 0-2, and they signed him, and then they won the Super Bowl. But, you know, that's only 16 games, right? You know, the thing I believe, like when you look at Nylander a couple of years ago with the Maple Leafs, you know, it just wasn't right all year. And that was a Toronto team that had Stanley Cup hopes. I don't think that Ottawa has Stanley Cup hopes, but they are hoping to take a leap. I think we're all looking at them to try to challenge, you know, for at least a playoff spot. And I just don't understand why you would disrupt that. Like, you know, what, how does it help you? And, you know, I think with the Senators, a great start sells you tickets. Like, one of the things that's going on right now in Canada is a lot of these teams are looking at it and saying, how are our fans going to feel about full buildings? You know, everybody but Vancouver in the league has them now. But I think a lot of teams, and not just the Canadian teams, I've had some U.S. teams tell me, you know, we have some situations here where some fans are saying they're still a little bit uncertain about going to a full building. And, you know, I look at Ottawa and, you know, they're battling to sell tickets. And, you know, if their fans are feeling a little bit nervous about going to a full building, you know, then you say, okay, well, I could go watch Brady Tkachuk tonight. Well, right now I can't. And that gives another reason for a fan not to go. And sometimes we lose grasp of how important those kinds of things are. And I feel that way. Like, I think if you're Ottawa, you're giving people another reason to say, you know what, I think I'd rather stay home tonight. And if I own the team, that would be a big factor to me there. Like, I know the owner's stubborn there. Eugene Melnyk can be very stubborn. And I think as he's getting people telling him he's wrong about this, he might be getting even more stubborn. But, you know, I think he's ready to pay Tkachuk on an 8-year deal. I know they aren't really thrilled about a 3-year deal, but if I was in charge, I'd be saying I'm taking my chance.
At what point do you think the conversation about, because you know they're getting calls, at what point do you think the conversation turns from try to sign them to try to trade them?
You know, I really am curious to see what happens here if he's not signed by Thursday. That's where I think you risk things going off the rails. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think, you know, I know there was a lot of talk last week. We have to be prepared that he's not going to be here. To me, that's just talk. That's like two guys yammering on sports radio. It's just talk, right? I don't worry about that at all. I think that the real pressure point comes now, because when you miss games, like at the end of the day, like you look at those guys in Vancouver, Pettersson and Hughes, they want to play, okay?
They wanted that negotiated, and they made it quite obvious. They wanted that done with, and they wanted to get back.
It was time. Like, you know, the Canucks wanted them there. They wanted them there. This is a huge year for the Canucks. You know, Dave Amber's betting his mortgage on the Canucks winning the Pacific Division this year. He needs them there. You know, like, but they wanted to play. Like, players don't want to miss games. Like, you know, even with what Matthew Tkachuk said about the Tkachuk family, like, we're the Tkachuks and this is who they are. At the end of the day, players want to play. They want to be in the lineup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that, you know, once you cross that threshold where someone doesn't play, I think if it's a really passionate player who really cares, you risk damaging that relationship. And that's what I'm looking at here. If this isn't done, like, I think you could sign him tomorrow and still have him in the lineup on Thursday. You could do it. But mm-hmm. if you sign him Thursday, yeah, maybe he doesn't play Thursday, but you're feeling good that at least it's done, right? Yeah. I think if you go into the season, especially with a guy as passionate as Tkachuk is, who loves to play, I don't know. I think you're really risking something.
There used to be an old saying. I'm not so sure if it's true anymore, but I'll bounce it off you and see if it resonates. There used to be an old saying that if you miss with your first-round draft pick, it sets your franchise back 2 years. I don't know if that's true anymore, but I want to turn the attention to the New York Rangers here. So it wasn't that long ago that things soured between them and Elias Anderson. He had turned that into a second-round pick, which turned into Will Cooley, who I think is a really nice player, playing for Windsor of the OHL. And as you tweeted this morning, Vitali Kratsov, a former 9th overall pick, go back to the Dallas draft. That's the Rasmus Dahlin draft. Has been given permission to seek trade. Well, his agent, Dan Milstein, has, I believe. Those are two first rounders, one a seventh overall, one a ninth overall. First of all, what's the situation with Kratsov? I saw that he didn't make the team. But what's the situation there, and how much does this hurt the New York Rangers?
Well, you know, first of all, I just got a text from Amber saying he didn't bet the mortgage, but the kids' education fund. So, you know, in my commitment to being honest and having the correct news reported, you have to be transparent. Amber's a great sport, great guy. So, you know, like the situation there is Kratsov didn't make the opening night lineup. I think that the challenge with, you know, Russian players sometimes is they have options. If they don't want to play, say, for argument's sake, in the AHL, they can always go back to Russia. And, you know, for that situation, it's a little more challenging sometimes than dealing with players from other countries. They can go and earn more money, for example, back overseas. And they're also playing in a bigger league, I guess. You know, so what I'm hearing there is that he's been given permission to talk to other teams. And I think there's a lot of interest, Jeff. I do. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be that easy to make a deal, because the Rangers will see that interest and they'll say, okay, we want something for it. But from what I've heard this morning, there are a lot of teams who've shown interest. So I think there's going to be an opportunity to get something done. You know, it's unfortunate the way it's worked out with them for Anderson and for Kravtsov. However, you know, I can see it on the Rangers roster. They've had such an explosion in young talent. You know, the fortunate lottery luck, the Lafreniere's, the Kakko's, Hedl, signing Panarin, bringing in Strome. Like they've, you know, Zibanejad obviously is now signed long-term. You look at the roster and you can see how he's potentially getting squeezed. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Young players are impatient. You look at all the young players going around the NHL and playing. You know, I think it might actually turn out to be the best thing for both him and them. We'll see how it gets sorted out.
You know, it's interesting, too, because for the longest time, you know, 2013 draft, no first or second. 2014, no first. 2015, no first. 2016, no first or second. And then we get to 2017 when they finally said, okay, we're done pushing for the Stanley Cup here. We need to start rebuilding. And Elias Anderson was the first player they took. Now, Filip Hedl is still there. He was also a first rounder. You mentioned Kravtsov. They also had Keandre Miller in that draft as well. So there are, or Elias Anderson, or rather, Keandre Miller was in that draft as well. So they still do have something from those drafts, Hedl and Keandre Miller, and we'll see what they can get for Kravtsov here. A couple of things before we let you go. Chuck Fletcher coming up at the bottom of the hour. Actually, you have a thought on the Flyers? Have Chuck Fletcher coming up at the bottom of the hour. To me, they're a real enigma team. I don't know where this team is going to fit when it all sort of sifts out in the Metropolitan. Do you have a handle on the Flyers?
I think they're going to be better. Like I'm going over my postseason predictions, who makes the playoffs. And in the Metro, I've got the Islanders in and I've got Carolina in. And then I'm having a tough time picking between the Rangers, Philly, and Washington. Mm-hmm. I think the Flyers are going to be a lot better. I think Carter Hart will have a bounce back year. I like the fact that they held on to Konechny. Like they told him they could have traded him, and they didn't because they believe in him and they think he's too important. I think sometimes the best trade is the one you don't make, and I think Konechny staying is going to benefit them long term. I just think it's going to be a real battle for those final couple of playoff spots, because I think New Jersey is going to be better, and I think Columbus is going to give people a lot of trouble. Like, they're going to be a hard team to play against. So, I'm not confident making a prediction on them to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to be there. And, you know, the thing I really like about Philly is they didn't lie to themselves about how bad last year was. They took it head on. They said, this is what was bad, and this is how we're going to fix it, because last year was a disaster and nobody was spared. Like Fletcher pointed out himself, the coaches took ownership. Some of the players did too. A few were traded. You know, if you want to be successful in life, you can't be afraid to ask yourself hard questions. and be honest in your self-evaluation. And I think Philly really was.
Chuck Fletcher here coming up in a couple of moments. A couple thoughts and as we wrap up this conversation, Elliot, on tonight, and we'll see the
By the way, Penguins. I speak to you way too much, just way too much.
Who do you speak to more, me or your wife?
You think she talks? She wastes her time talking to me? Not a chance.
I thought you were going to say it feels like I talk to you more, Merrick.
And I definitely talk to you more.
Seattle and Vegas tonight as well. Seattle's an interesting squad right now. With whether it's
can you imagine writing that sentence 5 years ago? Tonight in the National Hockey League, Seattle and Vegas.
Yeah.
People would have thought you were nuts.
The season opens up. Seattle and Vegas. I know. Like when we first started in these jobs, we'd be saying that, and here we are. And there are players in protocol for Seattle.
It sounds like one of them is getting out. I can't remember which one of them, but I heard last night that one of them might be getting out. So we'll see where this goes.
Yaron Croak is not.
It's not him. It's not McCann. It might be Johansson. I think that's who it is.
I think it's either Marcus Johansson or Jonas Donskoy. I think it's one of those two. But the other interesting part, I mean, and Mark Giordano named captain yesterday. That was a sort of obvious one. But the Seattle Kraken claiming Alex Barré-Boulet. Now, they were third in the claim order. They claimed him off waivers from Tampa. And we'd all talked about how there's no way this guy's going to clear. Someone's going to grab him. He's just too good a player. Like, he's not an American Hockey Leaguer anymore. And it's Seattle. Was that a surprise to you at all? Either that Seattle grabbed him, or maybe a team like, I don't know, Buffalo didn't.
Well, so what exactly are you saying here? Like, what do you mean by that?
One, are you surprised it was Seattle that grabbed Alex Barré-Boulet? Or two, like,
oh, I see what you're saying.
I look, and I'm thinking if I'm the Buffalo, like right now the Buffalo Sabres have Tage Thompson as a center. Okay, so
I look at that and I say
that's an experiment. Alex Barré-Boulet is a center. He may be smallish, but that's not an experiment. Tage Thompson in the middle is an experiment.
Well, I thought it was a great pickup for Seattle. I said the same thing about Arizona. Like I really thought Barré-Boulet wasn't going to last very long. I thought he was going to end up in. I actually thought he was going to end up in Arizona or Buffalo. I really did. And or even like a Detroit, you know, like I said the same thing about them, you know, but I think that's a great pickup for Seattle, a fantastic pickup for Seattle. You know, what's the thing we're all looking at them is, are they going to score? And I don't know what level he's going to score at in the NHL, but I think that he's scored in the AHL, and at least you give yourself a chance if you score at that level. I thought that was a great pickup for them. I like the Brooks pickup for Montreal too. I thought, you know, there have been some weird waiver days this year. Like, you know, I was surprised that Volkov didn't get claimed out of Anaheim. I was surprised that Cale Fleury didn't get claimed from Seattle. I was surprised that Clegg didn't get claimed from LA. And you know, I'm very curious to see if anybody gets Dell Cole today, who will, and we'll know in about 90 minutes. But I thought that was a great pickup for Seattle. Excellent.
Michael Del Cole just signed yesterday the one-year, one-way deal
no,
as
no.
well.
He's probably been signed for 3 months. Like,
okay, fair, and it was just released.
the Islanders have their own central registry.
The one that I'll end on this one, the one waiver situation this year that puzzled me was Buffalo and Washington with the Axel Janssen-Fjällby. Yeah. Claimed from Buffalo. They try to get him down. Washington claims back, and he's off to the Hershey Bears. And I say to myself, what just happened here? That means nobody else
tried to claim him.
What just happened here? What just happened here? What is Buffalo doing?
I know. Getting a free look. Check him out. Let's see what we got. See if it works.
Does he get to keep the swag bag? Like, what does he still have from the Buffalo Sabres? All right.
He should post a tweet with it saying, I'm not getting this back.
That's right. I'm keeping the Sabres bag and all these sticks
out of my cold hands.
Yes, your Buffalo Sabres sticks. All right, you're done talking to me. Return to your normal life.
I gotta tell you, it's the best news of the day.
Yeah.
What's my favorite moment of the day? 12:30 Eastern.
Yeah. That's kind of like saying, "Why are you hitting your head against the wall?" Oh, because it feels great when I stop. Thanks, Elliot.
All right. Have a great day, Jeff.